welcome to BCB 106.6 FM. I'm Carol Moss, and we have a special programme today to celebrate International Women's Day 2023. And this is called Standing Up and Standing Out. And I have some lovely guests with me in the studio who have all got something that they share. And we're going to hopefully have a good conversation, a good natter, and celebrate being women, being from Bradford, and all things in between. And particularly being women of colour. So really, really big welcome to all of you guests who've come in today.
Hello!
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, because we haven't got enough microphones in the studio, we've got three guests to start with, and then we've got two more. So I'd like to welcome Shai Bahan, who is a photographer. And I'd like to introduce Ruby Batty, who's a polymath and does all sorts of different things, but is basically a solicitor in Bradford and works as a non-executive director in many organisations. And Huma Nizami, who's executive director of the Race Equality Network. So welcome to you three.
Hello.
And then we're going to be joined later in the programme by Najwa Jawaha, who's a structural engineer, and by Tyra Bibi, who's a train driver for Northern Trains.
Woohoo!
Exactly. And we're not going to blame her for a single thing in this programme, okay? That's an order. Now, the reason we got together is because Shai Bahan, as a photographer, Shai, you've been taking photographs of people. Tell us a little bit about the project that you were involved in, which is why all these beautiful ladies are here.
Yeah, so it's actually launching today on International Women's Day at the Howarth Art Gallery in Accrington. Big plug out there. So Women in Uniform is the name of the project, and it's very kindly funded by the Arts Council as well, so thank you again very much for that. It came about, the idea came about before the pandemic. I've done quite a few exhibitions already on topics that really matter to me at the time that I document them, and I remember thinking, you know, I'm very grateful for anybody that takes part or who are audience members, but where are people that look like me, is what I remember thinking, and because I know, I mean, I exist, and I know that there are other people that like me that exist and that do like the arts and want to engage with the arts. So I had this idea brewing in my head, and then when we went into lockdown, and then shortly after we had the galvanisation of support for Black Lives Matter with the murder of George Floyd, I thought, I'm doing this. I'm going to do a project which documents women of colour in industries where we are traditionally underrepresented, and it's going to be a celebration, but it's very much about bringing these hidden figures to the forefront. And so that's basically what Women in Uniform is about. It is a celebration of women of colour who work in industries where we're underrepresented. But they're UK-wide, so this is the first nationwide exhibition that I've done. And I've been really blessed. I mean, I have met so many diverse women from so many varied sectors from all over the UK. So, I mean, in fact, we've got the first UK trained Muslim driver director right with us. We've got a structural engineer. And we have the executive director of the Race Equality Council, and like you said, Ruby is just a polymath who does everything, and they happen to be from Bradford. And I was lucky that I got women coming from London, from Bristol, from all over the Midlands that you would never have heard of them. They hadn't been. But the thing is about women of colour as well, we just tend to get on with it. We have to work twice as hard to prove ourselves, but we just tend to get on with it. So I just thought, well, I like that ethos, and I want to celebrate us, and obviously I want to create a visual narrative about what it is that they do, the sector that they represent, but also their own individualistic truth, because I fancy myself as a bit of a storyteller. I like to peel the onion, so to speak. And we started the engagement process. I found the women after I found the right venue. That was really important, that I worked with the right team.
Now, telling stories is really important to you. Mm-hmm. How do you convey a story with the photographs that you've taken in this exhibition?
In this particular exhibition, after I've had the engagement, which is a Zoom meeting, what happens is the idea during the Zoom interview, the idea starts to form in my head. And at the end of the interview, I know exactly how I'm going to shoot them. It's like a jigsaw puzzle coming together. I just know. And I've worked in studios before, so, you know, I'm sort of familiar as to what will work, what won't work. And then I have a discussion with the ladies, and I'm like, this is the idea that I have for you. Would you like to do it? They all say yes. And then they come in and have their photo taken. It's that simple, really.
And what's the impact for you of doing this work and working with so many people? I don't know how many people you've actually photographed.
Over 60 women.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's been the impact on you?
I think for me, I think one of the things I wanted to do was find a tribe of women that were like me. And I not just in the arts, but in general. I mean, I know that we live in Bradford, which is a multicultural city, but I don't feel that there are women like me that I can engage with. So I have a handful of really good friends and a lot of really nice acquaintances and colleagues and all the rest of it, and peers and mentors. But I wanted to find women who were like me, who didn't necessarily do the same job as me, but that had gone through the same struggles, but the same joys as well. And that just got any sort of, you know, for example, if you had a microaggression, but also if you had an achievement that you achieved as a woman of colour, they just got it. And that was really important. It was finding a tribe of women that way we could just celebrate, we could come together and congregate and say, look at us. Not look at us, it's look at us. It's in that way, in a celebratory way.
And that's a fantastic thing. And here we are with five women from Bradford as well. Mm-hmm. Who fit into that category?
Yes.
Hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was really important that I did get the positive representation from Bradford, because obviously I'm from Bradford. I'm very proud of being from Bradford. And I know women in Bradford who are women of colour, as well as these fantastic women who are sat in the room, that I don't feel get enough recognition. And I wanted to give them recognition. And also we're women of colour. I know that all of you have seen the aesthetic that I've created for this particular exhibition. I thought I'm going to give the audience colour. You're not going to be able to ignore us. And also, we just come out of this really grey and grim pandemic. I just wanted colour, and I just wanted it to feel sumptuous and joyous.
And I imagine that a lot of the women that you've interviewed have never stood, if you like, with nothing else but the camera in front of them and exposed themselves and presented themselves in that way. What was that like for you?
Well, we'd already had the engagement over Zoom, but I think why they relaxed is because basically I have a home studio. So when you allow someone into your home, you're giving them a measure of you. You're inviting them into your personal space. You can't get any more personal than your own home and your own sanctuary. And I felt like I needed to have that level footing because, you know, I was blessed. I felt very humbled that they'd opened up to me. So, of course, I had to open up my doors and allow them to come in. I know what it's like working in sterile studio environments as well. I mean, like I said, there are some women that had never, ever set foot in a studio environment before. And it's nerve-wracking. It's really, really nerve-wracking. So I deliberately set up a bespoke studio space in my living room, believe it or not.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Shai. We'll come back to you later on in the programme. But I want to hear from Ruby Batty and from Huma Nizami. Your work, both of your work, are very different, but you're still very rooted in Bradford. What do you think is different or shared about the work that you do?
I think our work, especially my work, is helping others, making sure the experience, the knowledge I have goes into those sectors like education, NHS, and it makes a difference. So either you're making a difference to a student or a pupil, or you're making a difference to a patient or carer with those hats, or in the legal field, you're helping somebody who has been put in a position where your skills and your knowledge can help them to get out of that pickle they're in.
So Ruby, you work right across the board about so many different areas of society. I mean, that's must pull you in different ways.
It does pull me in different ways, but it pulls me in the positive way, because ultimately it's helping others. So, and it's things that I've experienced. So I've been a student, I've been a pupil through the school system, through university. I'm a patient, being a carer. So it's you know, people in the community who come to the community centre, it stems around what I've been through as well, and the good practices, the not so good practices. I'm able to speak up for those seldom heard voices. So I'm a voice to others. I'm able to shape something better.
Now, you're a consultant solicitor, and you work in different ways, but you're the non-executive director role that you've found yourself in, I know, since you were in your early 20s, which is amazing. Does that give you a special position, a special place?
It is a special place because the decisions you make at board level can change somebody's life. Those decisions that you make... it's us that make the final decision, but I think the beauty for my non-exec roles is that we always take people with us. It's really important. But yes, it's a really important role because it's something, whether you're paid or not paid, as a non-exec director, you're regulated by the Charity Commission or the Companies House, and the rules and regulations of governance that you have to follow. And if it goes wrong, then you have to carry that can.
And in terms of standing up, you obviously that work that you do is standing up for yourself and for your community and the speaking out. What about that sort of visibility and standing out?
I think it's really important. I think it's really important to be there, to be a role model, be able to show your children, your future, that you can stand up, you can speak, and you can do it yourself as well. I think I really believe if you know you're right and you feel this decision's the right one, is to stand up and, you know, follow that decision through.
And Huma, your work is slightly different, isn't it? Because you're very, well, you're quite focused. You've got a sort of quite a direction of travel, which is quite focused. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about what you do.
So I'm the executive director of the Race Equality Network. So we are an organisation that champions race equality at a grassroots level and at a strategic level across the district. So we work with the key stakeholders like the council, the NHS, Bradford District Care Trust and the voluntary sector to ensure that any services that are developed and delivered are inclusive to meet the needs of the diverse communities that live and work here.
And how do you, what's your daily job? What does it look like?
So it could be anything from doing admin at the moment, because I'm on my own within the organisation, or it could be, representing the community at a strategic board level within meetings. So it varies. I could be at an event. I could be hosting an event. I could be running a members meeting. I could be writing a funding bid. So it's really, really quite varied, my role is.
And for people outside Bradford, how would you explain what a race equality network? Why do we still need, in 2023, a race equality network?
I mean, I think for our district, having an organisation like Race Equality Network is really important because the inequalities that we've witnessed as a result of the death of George Floyd, as a result of the inequalities faced by the communities around, as a result of COVID, it's very important that we have an organisation that champions race equality at all levels, because Bradford is such a diverse district. And we're one of the youngest cities in Europe as well. So we have a vibrant young community that's growing up here. So we need to make sure that any services that are delivered or developed are inclusive to meet their needs, whether that's mental health, access to employment, childcare, health services. But what we found throughout the pandemic is that these inequalities have widened. You know, the gap, when you look at somebody living in an inner city area of Bradford, and when somebody's living in an affluent area like Ilkley, the lifespan for somebody like that is 20 years less. And I think for me it's really important to ensure that these inequalities are not widened but are decreased, so services are accessible.
And in terms of race and racial issue, your racial equality, what would you say are the sort of, where is race and racism raising its head in Bradford? What are the sort of things that you grapple with, or that people grapple with, or how do you give and support the people who are dealing with issues?
So we were at the forefront of the Root at Racism movement, which was something that was launched by the West Yorkshire Health and Care Partnership. So we had over 500 organisations within the district that made a pledge to root at racism within all levels. So for me, as an executive director for the organisation, it's important that these organisations that have made that pledge ensure that they are rooting out racism at all levels, and are inclusive, and equity is at the heart of everything that they do. For me, if a service can't be a tick box exercise, you know, just because you're engaging with, like, say, for example, the South Asian community. It has to be meaningful. It can't just be a tick box exercise. So I want to see how diverse your board is. I want to see how diverse your staff team is, how inclusive you are when you're delivering your services. What training does your staff team have around cultural competency, for example? So these are the kind of things that will eradicate racism in the long term and make sure that, you know, our children that are growing up in the district have access to equal opportunities.
And do people respond well to you?
Not really. You know, my role as the executive director hasn't been plain sailing, but I think because I'm so passionate about the work that I've done, I've had lived experience of facing racism and inequalities myself. So I just want to create a platform for people, especially women of colour, to really focus on their, you know, their talents and develop their confidence and self-esteem to really challenge the system and, you know, have a place, you know, within strategic board meetings or leadership levels. But that's what's lacking in the district at the moment. We don't see enough leadership from diverse communities, and that's what we need to work towards.
And what's stopping people coming forward, do you think?
I think it's a lack of opportunity, a lack of resources, especially when we're working at a grassroots level. You know, funding is a real big issue in the district. And I think, you know, we have smaller grassroots organisations, and some of them, you know, rather than working collaboratively, they're going for the same pot of funding, which can be an issue. So I think for me, it's about more collaborative working, more partnership working, because there's room for everybody in the district. It's not about a competition. It's about enhancing the work that's happening.
And I imagine that you have faced many different sort of issues in your work, and like people sort of from disinterest to lethargy to not having the same passion that you have and not understanding why it's so important. Mm. But also as a woman of colour, and how do you sort of tackle that?
Yeah, I mean, as a community, we often tend to focus on the cultural restraints and barriers faced by women. I mean, I'm a Pakistani Muslim woman myself, and I've had the lived experiences of facing inequalities throughout my life. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about making sure that, you know, women, men, children across the district have equal opportunities and access to services. And I think I'm fortunate enough to have, you know, a strong network of strong women, like the ones that are here today. Shai, you're brilliant. Ruby is absolutely fantastic. That really empower one another and ensure that, you know, they are there to support one another. And it's difficult being a woman of colour in the district right now, because, you know, I often find that I'm sometimes a lone voice in the room, you know, fighting for the rights of ethnic minority communities, but I have to continue with that fight.
Fantastic. Well done for keeping on that fight.
And thank you.
Fight is what I imagine that you have found, Shai, in a lot of these women who've come forward. Well, at this point, I'd just like to introduce our two other guests. So, first of all, Tyra Bibby, train driver for Northern Trains. Fantastic. And tell us about your particular role, because you were the first
Pakistani female, Muslim possibly, train driver in the UK.
Fantastic. And now, how on earth did you get to there?
Oh, it wasn't planned as such. It's not something that I thought when I was 5 years old I want to be a train driver. No, I was a police officer with the British Transport Police for 10 years, and I was based at Leeds Railway Station, obviously on trains a lot, speaking with the train drivers and you know, the station staff, and just really sort of having relationships with them, professional relationships with them. So and you know, I'd get ribbed, why don't you just come and join, why don't you be a train driver, why do you want to be a police officer, you know, it's so hard, it's so stressful, it's so dangerous. Eventually I succumbed to that.
Was that your family that was saying that, or
well, my family as well, yes, yeah. Because you know, being a police officer can be quite dangerous as well. I loved it. I did it for 10 years and you know, I loved pretty much most of what I did. But it came a point where my mum especially was, oh, you know, I worry about you all the time. And the work-life balance was getting a little bit sort of not brilliant. So I thought, well, you know, maybe it's time to try something a little bit different. And because I've been speaking to so many train drivers, and also we had a particular train driver who was a special with us at British Transport Police, so he encouraged me as well. So that's when I just sort of threw my hat in the ring, and I applied for it. And I didn't put a lot of pressure on myself, because I had a great job. You know, I did really enjoy my job, and I was quite ambitious. Oh, I am quite ambitious, and I knew that regardless of what the outcome of this was, I would still be, you know, on a trajectory, as it were. So yeah, I just applied and I got through the paper sift, and then I passed the assessments, which I wasn't expecting to pass because I'd been told, and they were very difficult, and I was told that they were difficult. But I think I just fluked it. You know, I was quite lucky and I managed to get through. And then I was offered the job and I took it, and it's the best thing I've done.
And how long have you been doing that for?
It'll be 4 years in May this year.
And what are the particular challenges that you face as a driver, as a train driver, as a female, as a Muslim? What are the things that sort of come into the mix for you?
I don't think I've had any negative responses as such. Northern's such a welcoming organisation. They've got such brilliant sort of policies and procedures in place for everything, really. And I've just felt so welcome by pretty much everybody, even the drivers there. And it's a traditionally very much a white working class environment, male working class environment. There's now lots and lots of female drivers as well, but I'm the first sort of woman of colour, certainly in Northern, certainly in Yorkshire. I think there's one other lady in London who drives trains. She may be Indian, I'm not absolutely certain about her nationality, but obviously it's a bit of a rarity. I get quite positive responses back from people, and certainly the drivers at Leeds, everyone that I'm, you know, in contact with, I've not really had any negative.
I bet there's a few jaws that drop when they see you climb out of the carriage.
Yeah, this is true. I get comments like, "Oh, you're the driver." Yes. Oh, you're never the driver. But yes, that's to be expected.
And do you see yourself doing that for the rest of your career?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I absolutely love it. I think, you know, I wish I'd done it sooner. I think for me, I'm quite a people person, as I was a police officer for 10 years, and I get on with people from all walks of life. But I also love my own company. And as a train driver, you're in that cab and it's solitude. And one of the questions they asked at the interview, once you'd done all your assessments, was, how would you deal with that? And I said, you know, I love it. I love being with my own thoughts and just focusing on doing something. Yes.
So you'd encourage lots of other
Absolutely.
Women and girls to go and
Absolutely
be train
I
drivers.
Would, yes. I think it's brilliant. And you know, coming from a traditional Pakistani household, you know, I grew up in the 80s in Bradford, you know, which we were pretty much sort of very traditional family. That's not the sort of thing that we were, you know, told that we could do. You know, even the police, to be fair, you know, I never saw people like me in the police. I didn't see any females growing up in Bradford when we used to have the beat bobbies. I remember them, you know, and we knew them. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that you thought, oh, I could do that. So it's nice for me to be able to sort of stand and say, look, if I can do it, you can do it.
And do you feel that you stand out as different, or that you're visible, or that, you know, you're standing up for something?
I think so. And you know, I'm very passionate about sort of, you know, equality and diversity, and I'm very, very vocal about that. And, you know, as you said, sometimes that's not received very well.
Yeah.
You know, you almost become, it's like an us and them kind of, and that's not the reason I speak up, because it's something that needs to be talked about. We need to discuss these things. We have more in common than, you know, we have anything else.
Yeah.
And that's what I like to talk to people about, especially in places like the police and the railways, where, like I said, once again, traditionally working class white environments, just to bring my little bit of mix into it and start conversations, start dialogues about why people do what they do, and a bit of cultural awareness and things like that. So I'm really passionate about that. And, you know, we talked about George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement and all that sort of thing. That's another thing that I'm completely and utterly passionate about. And, you know, the whole sort of going back to Bradford and sort of growing up, and I just feel very privileged that I'm at where I am. And I like to think that I help young people to apply for jobs. I help them do their CVs. I'll help them with their interview tapes. I'll help them with application forms. So to me, although I don't do it on a massive, like, big level or an official level, you know, people come to me and ask me for help, and I'll quite happily help people who want to help themselves.
Fantastic. And do you see yourself, when you're working, do you witness any sort of harassment or, you know, the whole Me Too movement and this lack of safety for women who are working in those lone occupations for many of the time?
Obviously, there are issues in all organisations, and certainly, just as an example with the police, you know, at the moment, there are lots and lots of stories coming out about, you know, police officers, you know, committing crimes that they shouldn't do, that sort of thing. So it's obvious that these issues are there. However, I think it's how an organisation deals with those issues. And I've got to say, certainly on the railways, there's this big thing now about safety, especially for women on the railway. And, you know, if you travel on the trains, you'll see that they've got notices up about any kind of harassment, particularly sexual harassment, and they are sort of like clamping down on it. So, you know, women can feel safe raising those issues. On, you know, they can text the British Transport Police if something's happening on that train, or and know that they'll get a response from them. And certainly with Northern, they've got policies in place so that if something did happen, you know that you'd have their sort of like, you know, support, and they would help you out in that situation.
Fantastic. Well, we'll come back to you in a minute. But right now, let's move. And I'm sorry you've had to wait for so long, to Najwa Jawaha, structural engineer.
Yes.
Tell us what you do.
So a lot of people do say structural engineer. So I'm glad that you said structural engineer. Yes. So what do? I design buildings. I absolutely love maths and physics. And that makes me a nerd for some people. But proud to be a nerd. I love working with architects, and what really gets me excited is that I can actually change the communities, and I can have an impact, a positive impact on the future of how the environment is built. And that's what gets me excited. I mean, one of the stories that I love telling everyone is when I first started, I started my first week at work. I did something on a paper, so I designed something. And then I went to site, and then I got to see, and whatever I designed is called capping beam. It was bigger than me, and that's when it hit me. So what I'm doing is a completely different scale, and it makes me absolutely proud when I see the building constructed, especially because I specialize in tall buildings. Getting to climb up 45 stories, 50 stories, and looking down and said, this is mine.
Wow.
I mean, I'm just absolutely in awe. And you must get that sort of feeling every time you see a building.
Yes. I every single time I go back to my projects, I'm like, that is mine. And you know what? It will stay there. I will live a certain number of years, then I will pass away, but that building is going to stay there.
Yeah. And how long have you worked for this company?
11 years now, and it's brilliant. So this is the first company I worked after I graduated. And so just to tell you a bit about the company, so WSP is a global engineering firm. So it does all different types of services required to shape the built environment. So I specifically do structural engineering, which is very specialized field about designing buildings. And I started as a graduate in the company just after completing my civil and structural engineering from University of Leeds. And I've been doing it since then. I've worked in London, I worked in Manchester, I worked in Leeds. So I'm leaving my mark everywhere.
Fantastic. Now that you are really somebody that stands up and stands out. And what was the response when you got the job? Because I imagine there's not many, well, we know there's not many women engineers still in this country, and women of colour must be even fewer.
You know what? I felt it into, I'm going to give you two different scenarios. At work, yes, I looked different, but maybe I was blind because I did not feel anything when I walked in. I confidently went in, I did my work, finished my work. But I have come across women who say that they feel very awkward when they walk into a meeting room full of male, white, and that's what the industry is. It's changing that perspective of it's bringing in diversity that's still missing. I would say it's the industry is changing, but it's changing so slow that we really need to do something. And everyone, like, I mean, from the day I started, because I'm very passionate about engineering, I'm very passionate about inspiring, I call myself a role model, mentor, I do everything that I get my hands on. But there are this, because of how it's been like this industry, the male, white male dominated field for centuries, it's going to take absolutely ages. I mean, there was a paper that was released by NCE, New Civil Engineers, where it said that it's going to, if at the rate the industry is changing, is going to take another 200 years. Do we really have 200 years to get to the equality? It's something we really need to work on.
But do you feel responsible for the future of, you know, getting more women engineers? When you work, if you like, in that sort of role and that position, do you feel a weight on your shoulders, or do you just get on with the job?
What I feel is not to bring in more women in engineering, but to make it more diverse, because I'm more passionate about people from different backgrounds. It's not just about one thought process, because if you come from one background, you think of a problem, because engineering is all about problem solving. You come up with solution from one point of view. But if you have people from diverse backgrounds, it doesn't have to be female and male. Anyone, you're bringing in different thoughts, which means you're coming up with more innovative designs, you're coming up with problems. You look at the same thing from so many different angles that you're just changing the world. And that's what I'm more passionate about.
So you're really making a good business case for them. And same with you, Tyra. You know, you're making a real case for making the railways more friendly, or for making engineering more friendly and open by the very fact of you being there. So, okay, let's just take a little break and have a little music.
A little girl, I wished I was a boy. I tagged along behind the gang and wore me corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an engineer. Mama told me, can't you be a lady? Your duty is to make me the mother of a pearl. Wait until you're older, dear, and maybe you'll be glad that you're a girl. Dainty as a Dresden statue, gentle as a Jersey cow, smooth as silk, gives creamy milk. Learn to coo, learn to moo, that's what you do to be a lady now. When I went to school, I learned to write and how to read some history, geography, and home economy. And typing is a skill that every girl is sure to need to while away the extra time until the time to breed. Then they had the nerve to say, what would you like to be? I says, I'm gonna be an engineer. No, you only need to learn to be a lady. The duty isn't yours for to try and run the world. An engineer could never have a baby. Remember, dear, that you're a girl. She's smart for a woman. I wonder how she got that way. You get no choice, you get no voice. Just stay mum, pretend you're dumb. And that's how you come to be a lady today. Then Jimmy come along and we set up a congregation. We were busy every night, love and recreation. I spent the day at work so he could get his education. Well, now he's an engineer. He says, I know you'll always be a lady. It's the duty of my darling to love me all her life. Could an engineer look after or obey me? Remember, dear, that you're my wife.
Okay, that was Peggy Seeger there with I Want to Be an Engineer. And we've got an engineer in here with us today. We're BCB 106.6 FM. We're a special celebratory programme for International Women's Day, standing up and standing out, talking to Shai Bohan about her project, Women in Uniform. And we have with us Huma Nizami, Executive Director of Race Equality Network. We've got Najwa Jawaha, a structural engineer, we've got Tyra Bibby, train driver for Northern Trains, and we've got the lovely Shai Bahan. Yay. And we've just been talking about, really, about sort of our jobs and how we infuse our jobs. But I just wanted to ask you to say something about the project that you've just been involved in. And we won't let Shai talk here for a minute. You know, we can pretend she's not here. What was the project like for you, and what did you feel being selected or selecting yourself? What did you think the message was about? How did you approach it, and what do you think the impact is on yourself? Who's going to go first? Okay, Najwa.
Right, so when Shai sent me a message, I read half of it and I said yes. Because to me it was screaming, change perceptions, which I'm absolutely, absolutely passionate about. And I think it was amazing because she's just put a spotlight on all of these careers, all of these backgrounds, all of these women who are doing amazing work, but they don't come forward. Mm. So I think for me, it was like, yay, yeah. Camera. And like, to just say, you know, like to come forward and say, this is it. Like, you know what I find absolutely amazing when I go to schools and when children see me looking like this and then I say I'm an engineer, is that jaw drop? They don't realize I'm an engineer and they don't...
Tell us what you look like, because we're on radio.
Ah, so what I look like. I do not look like a typical engineer. So normally the perception is you're male, you're white, you're wearing grey shirt, black pants, muddy boots, yellow vest and a hard hat. I wear a scarf. I wear full makeup when I go to work. 90% of the time I'm in a dress, and 70% of the time it can be pink as well. I wear heels, and I do turn up to site looking like this as well. Just instead of wearing tights, I wear my jeans, put my hard hat on top of my scarf, and I'll go. And you know what was brilliant? People do look at me at first when I get to site, but then they get used to do it.
Fantastic. What about the rest of you? What was the impact? Come
on. I mean, I think when Shai contacted me, it was a real privilege that, oh my God, somebody wants to, photograph me. But I think I faced many challenges and obstacles along the way. And I personally think to inspire other women, we really need to shift the language used when it comes to women in professional roles. Like Najwa was just saying that, she's, an engineer. Thyra was saying that she's a train driver. So I think we need to change the narrative about the roles that women can take within in a professional field, because we're still fighting the stereotypes that are still really deep rooted within our own cultures. So I think what we need to do is we need to set an example and be the role models that, you know, other young women aspire to be like. And growing up, I didn't see many role models like me. You know, so I didn't see many brown women on the telly, hardly any actually, or any black women, or in TV shows. So it's really important for us to change that narrative and say, actually, do you know what? You can be that woman, you know, that inspires others and, you know, leads, you know, within leadership positions. Mm-hmm. And when Shai, you know, contacted me, I was really privileged and I thought, oh my God, this is such a really good opportunity, because it's very rare to see women of colour, you know, in different fields like, you know, train drivers, police officers, engineers. So it's a fantastic project, and Shai made me feel like $1 million, you know, when she was taking the pictures. You know, she said, Beyonce does this, and she was posing. And I thought, oh my God, I've never made to feel so special. So it was really good, and I think it's a fantastic exhibition and a much needed one, because in the district we face so much. I mean, generally women face so many obstacles, from misogyny, racism, inequalities. So I think, you know, we have to be the change we want to see. Mm-hmm. And until we put our foot down and say, actually, we're here, we're visible, you know, it's bringing that visibility out. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of women that are doing excellent work behind the scenes, but we need to see them women, you know, to inspire our next generation of, mm-hmm. you know, females. So, yeah,
and you
fantastic.
Talk about the obstacles, but actually, so many women overcome all those obstacles and they just get on with it. And that's what I think the message has been to so many of the women who face those. What about Tyra? What did you feel about being chosen or selecting yourself, and what was the experience like for you?
Oh, it was when I got the message from Shai, and also Richard from work, he contacted me as well. And I certainly was very... enthusiastic about it. It took me a while to get back to you, didn't it? Because there was all sorts of other stuff going on. I was, had some personal issues and stuff. So, I got back to you, and then, right, I said, okay, I'm going to turn up at this photo shoot. And she asked me to bring my work bag and my tools. And so I turned up in my uniform and like yourself. She was like, I felt amazing. I was like, this is brilliant. Yeah. I felt like a superstar, you know. And I said, I bet you say that to everybody, don't you? She's like, oh, like, you've got amazing skin tone. I was like, yeah, you say that to everyone, don't you, Shai?
But when you look at yourself, which is the other side of it, isn't it? When you look at yourself and you look at your pictures, do you see the same person?
No.
No. I see a much more confident woman, you know, somebody that can break all the barriers. Recently I was invited to the ceremony of King Charles coming into Bradford, so it was at City Hall. And I was, astonished to see a table full of young women, from the hijabi boxer, to women leading in sports and media, that were, having full-blown conversations with the king about their achievements. And I was, I was so happy and proud that these women are from Bradford and they're achieving so much at such a young age. And I think what I said before is about changing that narrative. So to inspire the next generation of women, we must do better at visualising and bringing these, women to the forefront, which is not often a done thing.
Thank you, Huma. And what about yourself, Najwa? What did you see when you saw the finished photograph?
I felt like I was in the sky, like she said. There was smoke coming out. We walked in there and then we were floating in the cloud. It was amazing.
But did you see, was the perception of you the same as you feel?
Yes. It's two different things. Yes, I felt amazing about the confident person that was shown in that perspective, but then I was also thinking about, now this is going to be shown to other younger women who do not expect a confident looking engineer. I was wearing red with my red background and colorful dress. So for me, that's a powerful image for the next generation I want to inspire. And like I said before, I want them to consider for, I don't even go to schools and say you need to become an engineer. I say you need to look at what you can achieve, because I am I'm standing right in front of you. I have overcome so many barriers, and if I can do it, you can as well. Just forget about those obstacles, because most of the times they're not even there right in front of you. It's inside you. So you need to overcome them, you need to challenge them, you need to get to that point. And I think that photograph that Shai's amazingly taken shows that.
It's a real balance, isn't it, by between being who you are and doing the work you do, but wanting to find a way or a platform to actually take things forward. And I was going to ask you, what next? What comes after something like this for you? Where do you go with it? Do you go back and carry on doing your work, or do you think there are other things that you can do, or that you want people like Shai, who sort of, had that commitment to going out and getting the funding to do this, and also putting on an exhibition? I mean, that's a very unusual thing to do. So what might be next for you? No. Okay.
So what I say is, and I mean, this is how we met as well, Shai. I believe in constantly looking for different opportunities to challenge, and that's why I'm actually a multi-award winner. So because of the type of work, so I'm constantly forcing myself to go and break another barrier. And this is, as role models in all of us, we need to do that, because up to a certain point, we need to stand up. We didn't have any role models, but we need to become those role models for the next generation. Personally, I go and I challenge myself, prove to myself by winning an award, or I have lost a lot as well, but winning them. And then I say, this is it. And you know what? Sometimes when I'm not feeling very positive myself, I just look back at them and say, if you can achieve all that, you can overcome the next challenge as well. And for me, it's like constantly striving and then overcoming that I'm going to use the word barrier again, so overcoming that thing that's in your head.
What about you, Tara?
Exactly like yourself. I always say to myself, right, that's it, I'm not doing anything else now. But I can't just sit still. I get itchy feet. I need to do something. I need to challenge myself. Something that I'm passionate about. I mean, I'm even starting to think that once I've sort of learnt my craft properly, you know, focusing on learning that properly, and then maybe I'll apply to become a magistrate, because I do think that something, you know, once again, we need more diversity in that area, in the criminal justice system, to be a lot more equitable. Living in Bradford, hearing people's experiences of their experience of the criminal justice system, which, you know, if we're going to be honest, as a whole, including the police, the CPS, the prison service, all these need to be reformed. And that's something that I'm very, very passionate about, especially for young people in Bradford. That's my sort of big passion. And if I can go, one of the reasons I joined the police was so that I could make a difference in my community, to be a little bit more equal, a lot more equitable for the justice system. You know, like I did my little bit and I'm happy with what I did. So that's something that I'm thinking about. Hopefully in the next year or so, that's something that I will put my mind to doing. And even in the police, you know, I never stopped. I wasn't like, right, I've got here now and this is what I'm doing. I was constantly, you know, I did my sergeant's exams. I did the part two of that. I passed that. I was acting up as a sergeant. I was a federation representative, which was like a union rep. I was a black workers group representative for Yorkshire in BTP's, a national force. So for pretty much the whole of the north. So there's always something that I'm doing, and there's a current, you know, a common theme there, which is equality, diversity, race, all that sort of thing. So that's something that I would like to continue to do, and it's one of the reasons that I do what I'm doing now, right at this moment in time, and also going into schools with Northern. You know, I don't just talk about being a train driver, and like you said, it's not like, yeah, you need to be a train driver or you need to be a train conductor. It's about, there are so many opportunities. Don't limit yourself. You can do anything as long as you are willing to put in the effort.
Fantastic. Homer?
For me, I think, you know, I'm really passionate about reducing inequalities, tackling racism. But I think to eradicate racism fully, we must get rid of the stereotypes and misconceptions that exist around us. And this means having a more diverse representation at board level down. So what I've developed at within my role is Women Leading the Way Network, and that is a network of women that are mentors for other young women and women of colour across the district who want to take up more leadership positions, whether that's in a voluntary sector organisation, whether that's in the NHS or a public sector organisation. And I think with that, because I'm so passionate, I want women to develop their confidence and self-esteem to take on more roles that will help them develop their confidence and take on leadership positions. So that's something that I'm developing within my role at the moment, because I think, you know, there's so many, you know, positive role models out there when we see the work that's going on, whether that's in arts, media, sports. But again, it's about bringing that to the forefront and, you know, having that visibility. So I'm hoping that, you know, through this exhibition that Shai's, you know, photograph 60 women, it will really inspire the younger generation to actually say, do you know what, I can become a train driver, I can become an architect, I can become a police officer, you know, and the world's their oyster, but we just have to instill that confidence within, you know, within the younger generation.
And do you think there are enough opportunities for sort of networking and sharing experiences and supporting each other? Because, you know, sometimes, you know, they're not all hunky-dory roles, you know, you're not going to have times where you feel a bit down about what you're doing, or you know when people are look at you and you're not, it's not your best day. You need that sort of support, so it's not just about getting the leadership role, it's supporting each other.
And I don't think there is enough opportunities for women to come together collectively and, you know, talk about their struggles and the barriers, but within my role, I'm hoping to develop that. You know, in 2021, we had an event called Women Leading the Way Network, and that was 100 women in one room, and they were so inspired because we had 13 women of colour who talked about the career progression, the barriers that they faced, and it was so inspiring. And, you know, everybody came back to me and said, we need more of this. But I think capacity just overtakes sometimes, you know, the pressure that there is in the system at the moment. So we need to develop more of that, and, you know, women to come together and share such experiences, which is fantastic.
And now I want to ask Shai what it's like for you hearing about the impact of, you know, being involved in the exhibition, and what you feel about now. And obviously today the program's going out, we've pre-recorded the program so that you and all the other women can be at the launch of your exhibition. Tell us a little bit about where it's going to be and when it's going to be, and what you're hoping to get from sharing on International Women's Day your photographs with the world.
So, yeah, first of all, thank you all very much. I didn't pay them at all. I'm really humbled by all your feedback. And with these three women and all the women, I massively believe that we need to be bolder and we need to be braver. And you've got to have the sheer will and the knowledge that, you know what, you will break that barrier. You've just got to believe that it will happen. And also, I'm a big believer that if you work hard, it basically silences any critics anywhere. And as women of colour, we do have to work harder. And when we do it, we deserve it. So we deserve this platform. I think it's really important to have space. So you're talking about networks, forging networks. I would like to speak to all the women, certainly at the launch and after launch, to see if we can continue somehow, keep it, if there are ways of us staying in contact. That there is a huge possibility that this particular exhibition might be coming back to Bradford.
Yay.
As well, it's a huge possibility. We're in talks for that at the moment, and possibly go on tour. And from that, I will just add more women onto there. I'd like to eventually take it to America and get Oprah Winfrey, Oprah Winfrey in it, Michelle Obama and Jennifer Lopez. But that's way down the line. Right now, my focus is on the women in this particular exhibition and supporting them on their journey. And it will be at the Howarth Art Gallery in Accrington on International Women's Day. It had to be that day. I pre-planned it. Had to be that day because as women of colour, we don't get enough positive representation, and that International Women's Day is for every woman on the planet. So, and we deserve a platform just like anybody else, and this is a very safe space. And I think if you are offered a visual narrative or any kind of opportunity in the arts to have a platform where you can have your voice and share your stories, and people will be interested. And, you know, thank you so much once again, all of you, for taking part in this. It's certainly richer having worked and met every single one of you, and long may we continue. Keep fighting the good fight.
And what's next for you?
I would really like to work with young people. It's funny, you're all talking, I'm listening to you all. I would really like to work with young people because I don't think I have really. I like working with women, I like working with people from marginalised communities, but I haven't really worked with young people, and I do believe that they are the future. I would really like to pass on the mantle, so to speak. I don't think I'll ever retire because it's not the kind of job that I would ever want. You have to retire from. I love what I do. But I would like to encourage young people, and certainly from, you know, ethnic minorities, but young people from even off council estates that don't have the opportunities that someone who has access to more resources and funding and income has to take photographs. And you can take a photograph on your phone and do it really well, as proved. So I will be delivering workshops with young people after this. So watch this space and see what comes ahead of 2025.
That sounds like a real plan. What about the others? We've heard about Tyra, some of her plans. What about you, Najwa?
Sky's the limit, you never know.
Yeah, the sky, that's the building,
sky,
isn't
the
it?
The building goes taller and taller and taller.
Skyscraper.
I am stepping into more and more into leadership role. I'm already associate director level now, so that's already a good example for anyone who's coming behind us. But I also know that there are not many women, and not many women from ethnic minority background at the leadership level and at the board level. So that's where my target is. That's where I want to be, and I want to become an example and a role model for everyone who's following.
And Huma?
For me, it's about obviously developing the work at Race Equality Network, continuing the fight for, you know, tackling racism at all levels and inequalities, developing Women Leading the Way Network, and hopefully this platform will be that, you know, that safe space where women can come together and, you know, look at the challenges ahead. But for me personally, it's about continuing to smash that concrete ceiling, because as a woman of colour, as women, we have that glass ceiling to smash, but as a woman of colour, it's the concrete ceiling, and I'm going to continue to smash that ceiling with my sledgehammer as far as I can, you know, I can go, really, to make sure that, you know, women have the opportunity to excel in everything that they do.
Tara, do you want to say anything else?
No, I think everything's been said, but yeah, just to reiterate, really, you know, and what I'd like to sort of get out then, which is something that I like to say to people, is that we have so much in common. It doesn't matter what colour you are, it doesn't matter what race you are, what religion you are, we're human beings. We have so much in common, and if we can work together with that, then I think, you know, the future is bright.
Well, fantastic. Thank you all so much for coming into BCB and sharing and talking about the things that, you know, the things that have affected you and where you come from and what you do and how powerful you all are and how empowering you will be, and you are through the photographs but also through yourself. So I'd like to thank very much Tyra Bibby, train driver for Northern Trains, and to Huma Nazami, executive director of Race Equality Network in Bradford, to Najwa Dwaha, structural engineer, and to Dr. Ruby Batty, who has left us now, and finally to Shai Bahan, who's the photographer. Woo! I've been Carol Moss. We've been standing up and standing out on International Women's Day. Happy International Women's Day, everyone, and cheerio. Where echoes come to rest.
I've died a little more. I know that I've